Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's Ag Report. I'm Jim Finn. My guests this morning are John Bergen from Chagas, Rosemary McDonough from the IFA, Amy Ford from the Farmers Journal, and my final guest will be Linda Connors from Inland Fisheries Ireland. My first guest this morning is John Bergen, and John is with Chagas in the NINA office. And this morning, John and I are going to be talking about education and educational opportunities for people who would like to enter farming. We will also be talking about health and safety, particularly with regard to silage cutting that's going on at the moment, and I suppose looking after yourself if you have a bull on the farm. And finally, there's a sheep event coming up, and John is going to fill us in with all the details about that. Good morning, John, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Jim. So we run an education distance greenstore course here in Tipperary. It's based out of Turles office, and we started a course there January just gone. So that course is going well currently, and we're looking to fill up another course starting next January 2024. So we're currently taking names for that course. If any listeners there are interested or know anyone that might be interested, they can, if they ring up the Chagas office in Turles, or else if they Google Green Cert Chagas Tipperary, they'll also to get my contact details there. So basically our course, it's a lot of it's online in the evening time, mm-hmm. but also then we have a number of skills days on farms throughout Tipperary, and those skills days are on during midterm and school holidays, which is very suitable for any teachers out there as well. So we're still getting big interest for people applying for Green Cert. There's many benefits there. A big one there is get a top up on the Young Farmer Scheme of €170 a hectare for 5 years. So that's one big interest for people. And another one then is a 60% grant on TAMS mm-hmm. for areas in your farms like slurry storage or milking powder. So we're still getting big interest, and we're taking names then for the course starting next January.
Right, and is there any appetite then for the full-time courses? I know they'll be probably starting next September, so people can apply to the colleges as well.
They can, yeah. For people straight out of school, they'll be finishing in the next couple of weeks, they can get on to their colleges across the country, Kildaughton and so on, and they're taking places there at the moment as well.
Okay, so that's the situation with regard to education at the moment and the opportunities that are out there. Now, moving on then, I suppose, to something that's at the top of our mind. We've had a few farm fatalities over the past couple of weeks, and none of us want to see one of these. So what should a farmer be looking at when he's cutting silage or she is cutting silage at the moment?
Yeah, so look, it's a very busy time of the year. Farmers at silage and contractors at silage at the moment are working very long hours, and they can often be fatigued. But look, there's a couple of things that are very important to remember. First off, it's important not to compromise safety in the rush to get silage in. So we know contractors and farmers are all very busy, but to make sure that they have proper maintenance of their machinery, that the brakes are checked, tyres are maintained, lights and so on are all working, and their machinery is all serviced. Also, it's very important to have proper warning signs on their machinery and their tractors, and particularly when coming in and out of road entrances, good visibility is very important as well for the public on roads. So that's one area. I know they're all very busy, just to make sure that the machinery and tractors are all well-maintenanced. The other area then, I suppose, a critical one is children around farmyards this time of year. I suppose over the last number of years, the main cause of fatal accidents with children in agriculture has been involving tractors and machinery. So look, when we know when silage is going on, sometimes children like to be involved and they like to see the machinery in the yards. But I suppose you have to remember that farmyards aren't playgrounds, and that children should be well out of sight of machinery at this time, because contractors and farmers are busy enough without having to look out for children. So look, children under 16 then shouldn't be allowed or shouldn't be asked to help out machinery work at silage time. And those over 16 should even be well trained. So look, it's very important just to remember that children should be with an adult when silage is going on, and that our farmyards aren't playgrounds over the next couple of weeks.
And John, at what age can a child, and I suppose, or a young adult, what age can they drive a tractor at?
They can drive over 16, once they're 16, once they have their license. Okay, and even at that, we don't want a situation when people are going in at 16 and they're not properly trained. So it's important that they're properly trained, and then they're not expected to work very long hours as well, as another thing, Jim.
It is incumbent on the farmer or the contractor to make certain sure that the person has a license.
Yep, that's correct. And so another area on silage as well is to be mindful is we've seen in recent years silage pits are getting higher and higher.
Higher.
Farmers haven't upgraded their silage pits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just one area to watch, that we're not overfilling our silage pits. This puts maybe people at risk when they're getting very high. The contractor at risk when he's filling the pit, and then those who are putting the plastic down, and children maybe around the farmyard as well. So very important to be mindful that we're not overfilling our pit, and if we're in a situation like that, maybe we might be better off to make a second coat with round bales. So that's something else to watch, Jim, as well.
Right, and it's, you mentioned then, of course, that drivers should be properly trained. You know, a young person, you're dead right, a young person of 16 years of age with a licence, with a big, big trailer behind them, they'd want to be well trained to be able to stop when they should be able to stop, because that trailer loaded is quite a heavy piece of machinery.
Yeah, that's it. A lot of silage is done on small roads across the mm-hmm. countryside where there's people walking their dogs and so on. So exactly, the tractors haven't got any smaller in recent years. It's very big tractors, very big machinery. So the person driving it would want to be very competent.
Okay, we also mentioned that this time of the year the farmers should be careful and be safe around bulls. What have you to say there, John?
Yeah, I suppose it's something that's very relevant at the moment. A lot, on the dairy side, dairy farmers have probably been eyeing for the last month or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking at now putting their bulls into their off of their dairy cows and heifers, probably this week or next week. So, look, just be mindful. Bulls are very dangerous animals. Look, your listeners know that, but they just should be treated with caution. Even if they're seem good tempered, that they should be treated with a lot of caution. So that's just something to be mindful of. Take precautions at all times. A bull, always carry a stick. Don't ever turn your back to him. And I suppose one thing as well is there's a legal requirement there to put a ring on a bull's nose once they're over 10 months of age. So that's just something that as well, if you can get a chain onto the ring, then you have even greater control. So just for the listeners there to be very mindful of bulls over the next couple of weeks. And I suppose the most important thing is that if the bull shows any signs of aggression at all, that they should be slaughtered. Okay, that they shouldn't be given a second chance. So that's the most important thing. Especially mm-hmm. bulls have become very expensive in the last year or two. If you look at Angus bulls or any bulls that would be going off, the farmers have paid a lot of money for them, and they might be willing to give them a second chance. But look, no bull is worth someone's life on the farm or an accident happens. So any bull that shows any signs of aggression should be slaughtered.
It's also a time of the year when, you know, we're really talking about holiday period, and we're coming up to that now big time. Schools will be out in a couple of weeks, and people will be visiting farms. And of course, it's very important that the farmer makes anybody who comes onto the farm aware that the bull is in X field.
Yeah, exactly. There should be signs up in the farm. If there's a bull present, beware of bull. I said already, there should be a ring and a chain mm-hmm. on any bull as well. So yeah, look, it's about making people aware as well, if they visit your farm, that there's a bull or that there's silage going on or if there's slurry going on. It's about making people aware all the time. Yep.
Okay. Now, we also said we would talk about a sheep event that Chagas have coming up. So what about the sheep event, John?
Yeah, so Sheep 23 is a major sheep industry event. It's going to be the largest sheep event for the year. It's been a 5-year absence of the event due to COVID. So, look, it's planned to be a very good event. It's on the Saturday, the 17th of June, in Gortine College, Ballingarry, Rose Green. There's going to be upward of 10 technical areas for people who will be involved in sheep farming in areas such as breeding, grassland management, and flock health. Then there's also other practical areas as well on the day, to be practical demonstrations such as sheep shearing and sheepdog training. And also then there's going to be cooking demonstrations from chefs such as Neville McGuire. So there's going to be an awful lot going on today that will cater for a lot of people. It's free to the public, and it's on in Gortine College on the 17th of June. If any listeners there would like to, there's still areas left for trade exhibits, if anyone would like to put one there that are involved in the sheep industry, and that's open until the 29th of May, and they can get the information for that there on the website there, Sheep 23 exhibit booking.
Okay, well, thanks very much for joining us, John, this morning. That, listeners, was John Berrigan from Chagas in Nina. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Rose Mary McDonough, and she is the Business Affairs Chair with the IFA. Good morning, Rose, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to your listeners.
Okay, now we have two topics. Where would you like to start?
I don't mind. We can do the credit union one first if you want.
Okay. Well, sure. Look at listeners. Rosemary said there we'll do the credit union one first. And you may have seen during the past week or so that the credit unions have entered into the lending market to farmers in a big way. And Rose is with me to talk about it. Okay, Rosemary, what does this mean?
Well, it's a new product. The credit unions are launching in this coming month in June. So it is a new secured loan offering. It's in addition to the Cultivate offering that they have at the moment. To Cultivate is offered to agriculture. So this new secured loan offering of up to 300,000 for 30 years with an APR of 5.49%. So, I mean, it's a very timely development. It's a welcome addition. It's great to see new products coming on the market, because new products will mean more competition, and more competition hopefully will mean better rates and more competitive rates. So it's great to see the credit unions expanding and being able to bring new products to the marketplace. And it's such a high level. 300,000 is a high level of a loan offering. It's in addition to the Cultivate product that they have, which is, they have it launched with, I suppose, the last 5 or 7 years. Yes. It's been brilliant, because anywhere they have launched the Cultivate, it has exceeded all expectations. It has hit its budget in what they're allowed to loan out in a very short space of time. So hopefully this new product as well will be of great benefit to farmers. We do welcome it.
Yeah, of course. And I suppose they're really building on the success of Cultivate.
Absolutely. Cultivate has been a huge success. I know there are great reserves in the credit unions, and it's using them to get them out and get them working and get them working for the credit unions. And that in turn will put them working for the customers and for the farming community. Okay. So there's also, there's space there in the market as well. Because, I mean, at the moment you have AIB, Bank of Ireland, and Permanent TSB. So there, with the departure of Ulster Bank and KBC, there certainly was a void there in the marketplace. And, I mean, there was the best part of 1 million accounts that had to be changed over. Mm-hmm. So there was a huge body of work that was done over the last couple of years with Ulster Bank and KBC leaving. And I suppose we in IFA and the Farm Business Committee would have worked very close with Ulster Bank and KBC, and we had many meetings, and we tried to bring issues to the table and try and get the transition process as seamlessly as possible, and that the terms and conditions, I suppose, that the farmers had with those banks, that be it the rates that they had or the credit facilities or the overdraft facilities, that those were mirrored, I suppose, to a certain degree, or transferred, that they were able to get those options with the new bank that they moved to.
Okay. Staying with that particular subject, over the past couple of weeks, we read where not everybody has transferred to a new bank, and there's still quite a number of people who haven't been able to transfer. Have you any concerns with regard to that at the moment, or are they mainly non-farmers?
Well, I suppose I'd have to say, from a farm business point of view now, not much has come across my desk, recently. But, good. I mean, I would say at this stage that for customers that still have issues to engage with their bank, that's what the bank would have promoted from the first place, to go into their bank, engage with their bank. I mean, at this stage, they might have to do it online or with a customer service number or whatever, but they need to engage with their bank and they will try and help them as much as possible to try and transition, because they need to. But I have to say that we had, it was a huge body of work. There were so many calls and there was such concern out there when, you know, that whole process started first. But I have to say at this stage, from a farming community point of view, that it would be coming into the Farm Business Committee in IFA, that that has definitely quietened down and for the good. I think people have moved, but definitely to engage with their bank if people still have issues.
Okay, now coming on to the second subject we want to talk about this morning, which could have a significant impact on some farmers. So will you explain what's happening with regard to, is it rezoning land?
Yes, exactly. That's a huge issue. So we have the residential zoned land tax, which was mentioned first in the budget back in probably September, October 21.
Yeah.
It's when it came in first, as far as I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I suppose, moving on from what, or its predecessor would be the vacant site levy.
Yeah.
So the original one was called the vacant site levy, and farmed land was exempt from the vacant site levy. But I suppose that was being administered by the council, and that, I suppose, it wasn't working very well. So the government, in its wisdom, have, you know, reformatted, I suppose, and come up with what they're calling the residential zoned land tax. What they're proposing, what's coming in, is 3% of market value of the lands that would be zoned.
Right.
So farmers or property owners would, in towns and villages, would need to check the county development plans in their council of their area and find out if their lands are zoned or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they're zoned and zoned residential, if residential is in the zoning, then they would be in scope for this tax. Now, there's a process, and there was options there for farmers if they wanted to be dezoned. They first was that they would apply to the council. That deadline passed now, the first last day of December, 1st of January. That was the original first deadline. So farmers would have had to apply to the, or landowners would have had to apply to the council to make an application to be dezoned. Then the local authorities had until the 1st of April to come back with their determination. They had to notify the landowners in writing of whether they allowed the dezoning or not.
Right.
And in the majority of cases that have come across the Farm Business Committee, most people did not get their dezoning that they had requested. So the next step now is that, and again, it was to the 1st of May, there was just a month.
Yeah.
Some of those deadlines were extremely tight, and even with Easter in the middle of it, made it even tighter, that a landowner then had to apply in writing to Onboard Planola, to make an application to Onboard Planola. So there was a huge amount of concern out there. There's a huge expense. Farmers or property owners would have had to maybe engage solicitors, get maps, get paperwork, maybe a planner or an engineer or somebody to actually help them make this application to Onboard Planola. So what we would say to, then sorry, go back one step. There was supplemental maps as well that were issued by the council. So again, landowners, property owners, farmers would need to go and check the supplemental maps at the local authorities again to make sure that if those maps or boundaries were changed, that in case any other lands were taken in under the zoning.
Right.
So at this stage, I would say to people that if they miss deadlines for one reason or another, that they should still make an application. They still need to make an application into the council for dezoning, if that's what they wish. Now, we, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar did state in the Dáil there, going back about maybe 2 weeks ago at this stage, that he does acknowledge that there are issues with this residential zoned land tax and that there are difficulties with it, and that it just needs to be fixed. and that they need to look at the legislation. So we are working on that at the moment, and we are our ask would be that farmed land is exempt from the residential zoned land tax, because I mean we would feel that this is a very unjust penal tax. It really does feel like a CPO, a compulsory purchase order, by the back door.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, really is penal. Because in comparison to the margin that maybe the farming enterprise is making, this tax will far outweigh. It's a much higher cost. So, I mean, the farmers will not be able to pay for it. So it will force them to sell, which is not the object of the exercise. Like we completely acknowledge that there is a housing crisis, housing need, housing issues, but there are plenty of other brownfield sites, derelict sites that weren't finished, ghost estates. If you look at the towns and villages around the countryside, there are so many towns where, you know, every second door or window could mm-hmm. be boarded up. Those all have services. Those all have paths, lighting, sewerage, and they're in towns, they're in communities. So, I mean, they should be looked at first rather than the greenfield site. Like the town is coming out to meet the farm. The farmer didn't go in to meet the town.
Okay.
So there are plenty of other options to look at.
Yeah.
But definitely. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. I was just going to say I'm running out of time. But before you go, so what's your message then to farmers this morning?
They really do need to, I suppose, first of all, check the supplemental maps
mm-hmm.
in case for any reason that zonings may have changed, and to see whether their lands are zoned or not. If they are zoned and they wish to have them dezoned, they need to make an application to the council to request that dezoning.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be the two main points.
Okay.
And if to make their application to the council for dezoning. And also from a political point of view, that I would say to all the TDs, the councillors, to anybody in the political circus, and to the farming community, that when you meet your TDs, they all feel like they're in election mode at the moment. So when you meet your TDs and your councillors, you need to make this an issue, bring it to their attention, and you know, explain how it is impacting you, because it is absolutely penal. It's completely unjust, and it's not relative to the income that's been made on those farms. So it will really put the farming enterprise at jeopardy, where you have farm families trying to make an income, and this being their farm business. This land has been in their families for generations. It has been passed down from one generation to the next. You know, they feel they're the custodians of the land. So they just want to continue to farm. And, you know, that is a point as well, too, that, you know, this land isn't vacant or idle. It is being used for food production.
Okay, well, for this morning, Rosemary, we're going to have to leave it. I want to thank you ever so much for joining us and sharing two problems that farmers are facing at the moment.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, my next guest this morning is Amy Ford. And Amy is the Deputy News Editor with the Irish Farmers Journal. And we're going to be talking about maybe three things in the course of this interview. And we're going to start off with all the controversy there is around the re-wetting of Irish bogland. You have an article in the journal this week, Amy, about it. So what's the score?
Yeah, we could talk about re-wetting for days, Jim. Thanks for having me on. So separately to the re-wetting, a significant portion of the country will be hit with new cap rules protecting peatlands and wetlands from 2024. So the Department of Agriculture is currently remapping the farmland affected by these new regulations, and it's to tell farmers of the new requirements that they'll have to meet to receive payments by the end of the year. Now, the only examples of standards that may be introduced that are listed in the cap plan were a ban on ploughing and the use of min or no-till when cultivating peat soils. We haven't got a lot to go on from the department, but that's kind of what they're telling us at the minute. So this, by the end of the year, farmers are to be contacted by the department, and they'll be told what standards they'll have to meet at a minimum on any peat soils to receive payments. And these rules are basically under the Good Agricultural and Environmental Condition, the GAAC 2 rules. And as you said, they must be followed for to draw down the payment. The department was unable to say exactly what the standards were, but as I said, my colleague Noel Barden, who wrote the story, he looked through the CAP plan and he can only see that the ones there that, that could be used were a ban on kind of ploughing on any kind of peat soil or cut back on it.
Right, and the Taoiseach weigh in on this during the week as well.
So the Taoiseach this week weighed in on the re-wetting, and anyone that's been living under a rock and that doesn't know what re-wetting is or the controversy over it is at the minute, it's been in the news a lot the last number of days. Government ministers and leaders have been out in force talking about it. So the latest is that the Taoiseach has said that there's aspects of the proposed EU Nature Restoration Law, that's the law that the re-wetting comes under, are going too far. He told the Dáil this week in response to a question from Independent TD Matty McGrath that we all understand the need to protect nature, restore biodiversity loss and allow nature to regrow, but there are aspects of it that go too far, particularly if it comes to taking agriculture land out of use for food production. And that's what the Taoiseach said. And he said, and I quote, "I share concerns people have across rural and urban Ireland about some aspects of it going too far and not fully recognising how we use land in Ireland." And he actually said that all time will be given to debate the nature restoration proposals next week. And he's asking that TDs come forward with suggestions on how these proposals can be improved and what compromises can be made. What are the proposals? I can hear you asking, Jim. He's basically citing the proposals. So the EU Nature Restoration Law contains a big range of land restoration measures, essentially, which are to be deployed across Europe, Ireland included, obviously, over the coming years to basically sequester more carbon, improve biodiversity. The targets in the law are still going through the European Parliament and the Commission, so they have not been set yet. But there are targets for up to 2030, 2040 and 2050, and they require that certain amounts of land be re-wet by those dates. So that's kind of where we are on the re-wetting. It's not going to go away anytime soon. I think the coverage is only ramping up on it, if I'm honest, because it's going through the European Parliament. It's going to be debated in the Dáil. And, you know, we'll really see where things will go with it in the coming weeks. I think there's two votes coming up in the European Parliament on it. So it'll be an interesting one to watch to see where the targets end up.
And, of course, if it ends up at a debate in the Dáil, there's not a lot we can do. You know, we're tied into European legislation one way or the other anyway.
We are, I suppose, but we have elected members out there, our MEPs, this week, the European Parliament's Agriculture Committee, so no more than the committees in the Dáil. The Agriculture Committee rejected the current proposals on the re-wetting law outright by 30 votes to 16. So we'll really see where it goes in the next few weeks.
Okay, now there's a commission on the nitrates being set up as well.
There is the nitrates derogation. I'm sure your listeners will be very familiar with the nitrates derogation, but the Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConnell, he set up a working group to essentially secure the long-term future of the country's nitrates derogation. This is called the Agriculture Water Quality Working Group, and it's to develop ways to maintain basically the maximum possible stocking rates in Irish farms and protect the current 250 kilos of nitrates band, the upper threshold held by farmers.
That's welcome, but again, this is something that, you know, Europe and European legislation is going to have a say in as well.
It is, yeah, and I suppose the thing with the derogation is that there's be a review of our water quality, Jim, in I think later this year or for 2024, and the derogation, depending on the results of those water quality results, the upper threshold could be cut down to 220 kilos of nitrogen per hectare. So obviously that has a massive impact on the 7,000 odd derogation farmers around the country who were farming at the upper threshold. It would reduce the carrying capacity on the land for stock, and they'd probably have to cut numbers or else take on more land. And we do know that the land market is red hot at the minute, partly because of that. But look, this working group anyway, or a task force as it's been called, it's made up of the Farmorgs, Chagas, the EPA, meat and dairy processors and other relevant bodies, and it's been chaired by the Department of Ag's Chief Inspector Bill Canlan. It's to meet next week, basically, in Port Leash, and it'll be very interesting to see what comes out of that too.
Definitely, and given all the indications we have at the moment with regard to water quality, and particularly here in Tipperary, it's not getting better.
No, it's not. And I think in often cases, and I know that the ICMSA president, Pat McCormack, he said that the 250 kg threshold is critical for the Irish dairy industry. And I know he's been quoted previously saying that, you know, it's not all farmers are basically being painted with the one brush, and that they're all really doing bad damage to our waters, when in actual fact, many farmers are involved in water quality programs such as ASAP or other locally led schemes. And it's a couple of farmers in a couple of areas that are causing the issues. And it's those farmers really that need to pull up their socks, I suppose. Pat McCormack said this week that if the derogation does drop to 250, or we lose the 250, I should say, that some of the most sustainable family farm units will be impacted if it is lost. So there's a lot really riding on this task force group and what they come up with.
Okay, and moving on then to the final topic we said we'd have a chat about before we went on air, and that is the TB figures for both North and South Tipperary.
Yeah, so we can go into detail. The department has given us a breakdown of TB reactors for the first quarter of the year, so from January to March. So Tipperary North, TB herd incidence is at 3.2% in Tip North, and in Tip South it's higher at 4.11. And for anyone listening in over the border in Kilkenny, who they may well be, Jim, it's up at 5.04% there. Overall, TB reactor numbers are up 15% in the 12 months to April 2023, which is, you know, it's not good news. So the latest figures show that there was nearly 24,000 TB reactors. That's an animal going down with TB in the year to April, and that's up from 20,700 over the same months in the 2021-2022 period. So that's not really good news. The majority of these reactors, or sorry, I should say the county with the highest figure of reactors was in Cork at 806, 478 in Wicklow, and 313 in total in Tipperary, including North and South. So not really positive news there. And the other side of it is that there was 2,337 herds restricted nationally at the end of March. So that's those herds are locked up. That's 2,300 herds locked up with TB, which obviously isn't good news.
And you don't have for herds that had to be culled completely?
No, don't have those figures. That's something we'll have to dig into. Thanks for the lead on that. But I'm sure we can dig that out for a couple of weeks' time. Like for anyone knows that who has ever tested positive for TB on their farm, it's a devastating disease, both inside the farm gate and I suppose around the kitchen table as well. It can really hang over our families. But spending has also increased, I suppose, separately, Jim, on TB. It's up 44% as well. So there's more money being spent, and the reactor numbers are going up, and I think that might tell its own story in one way as well.
And we're at this since the 1950s, and we haven't been able to crack it. So it is definitely an ongoing problem on Irish farms.
Yeah, no, it is. And like that spend, the department's put that down mainly to increases in compensation payments to farmers and a large purchase of supplies over the 3 months. Wildlife costs also soared by 92%. And rose €1.3 million. So there's a lot of money there going into TB and progress at this minute in time, going by these figures, comparing them to this time last year, isn't going the way we want it to go.
No, definitely not. Well, look at Amy. We'll leave it there for now. Thank you ever so much for joining us this morning. That, listeners, was Amy Ford, who is, as I said at the beginning of the programme, the deputy a news editor with the Irish Farmers Journal, giving us some of the farming news for this past week. Listeners, my final guest this morning is Linda Connor. And Linda is the South East River Basin District Director with Inland Fisheries. Good morning, Linda, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim.
Now, Linda, will you tell me a little bit about the Inland Fisheries, please?
Yes, Inland Fisheries Ireland is the state agency with responsibility for conserving, protecting and managing Ireland's inland fisheries resource. We are in charge of protecting all the rivers and lakes, and we also have a remit to 12 miles out to sea.
You say you are the director in the southeast, and does that take in all or the most of County Tipperary?
Yes, the district that I cover is the southeast, as you said, and that covers the Barrow, the Nore, the Shore, and the River Shore catchment. Brerry would be in the River Shore catchment.
Okay, and you know, we hear then from the EPA that water quality, particularly in Tipperary, is not good. And in spite of everything that maybe you're doing, and we also know farmers are doing their bit as well. I'm not saying they're all doing their bit, but there is a big effort by farmers to improve water quality. And it's still not good. Is that of concern to you, and particularly with regard to fish in the rivers?
Yes, water quality would be a big concern to us in Inland Fisheries Ireland, because without clean rivers and without clean lakes and the water, the fish stocks struggle. So we would have a huge concern around water quality, especially with our salmonid species. So our salmon and trout, they'd be quite sensitive to water quality. They need good, clean water and good, clean habitat to survive. We would call them a sensitive species. Eels and lamprey would also fall into this bracket. So yes, water quality is deteriorating and it is a concern for us. And as you say, it's becoming more and more out there in the public. People are much more aware of it, and there's lots of initiatives to try and improve water quality and to do our best for the environment. But we do have more to do, and we all need to play our part, whether we're a landowner, a farmer, an angler, a member of the public. We all enjoy our water courses for various different reasons. And of course, drinking water is another one, that we have to have our water quality to a very high standard in order to have clean drinking water.
Yeah, you mentioned their drinking water. Have you any remit with regard to private wells and things like that that might be on some farmers or a lot of households living in remote parts of rural Tipperary or rural Ireland, anywhere, would be getting their main water supply from their own well?
All the drinking water and private wells would fall more under the local authority and Uisce Éireann.
Mm.
Yes.
Now, primarily I have you on this morning because of a circular that you have out at the moment, or a campaign that you have on, and particularly targeted at farmers and the silage season. So can you give me your reasons for putting this out at the moment?
Yes, our concern at this time of year is it's silage cutting season, as we all know, and farmers are all very busy at the moment out cutting silage to have it for the coming winter. So what we would like to get out in a message today is to be very careful and for farmers to be proactive around managing their silage effluent and down the lines spreading slurry. If any effluent or slurry gets into the water courses, be it a river or a lake, it can cause deoxygenation in the water, which is detrimental for fish. So when the nutrients get into the water, the oxygen levels deplete and we can end up having a fish kill. So the message today is for farmers just to be careful around their management of effluent and their management of slurry spreading, so that the discharge doesn't reach the water courses and cause issues for fish. The big concern this time of year for us is our rivers. With the nice weather we have at the moment, our rivers are quite low, and they're already quite vulnerable because of low water levels. So there's less water in the rivers, less dilution factor if anything does reach the river. So it can have detrimental effects if this discharge does reach the river. So we're just appealing to farmers to be proactive and not let it get as far as the water course.
Now, the ordinary citizen, you know, and as you said, they're beginning to become more concerned with the environment and the damage that we're doing to it. But their understanding of a fish kill would be that it's the slurry or the silage effluent is poisonous, and it's poison that kills the fish. And that when we see these terrible pictures on television of a whole lot of fish dead, and it's absolutely horrific. You say to me it's the deoxidization in the water that really kills the fish. It's not the poisonous substance that effluent might be?
Yes, it's the deoxygenation in the water when the organic material reaches the water. And, you know, what we're trying to really appeal today is for people to let us know. You mentioned there about people seeing fish kills and thinking, what can they do? So we would encourage any member of the public to contact us. We have a 24-hour hotline and the number is 0818 34 74 24, and anyone can contact us on that, the 24/7 hotline. And we really appreciate all the reports that come in on that, because it makes us aware of what's going on around the country, and especially, as I say, at this time of the year with lots of silage cutting going on and with our rivers already vulnerable, being low water levels, and obviously the rivers heat up this time of year as well, and the species are already under a thermal stress from the warmer waters. So any little bit of discharge getting into the river will have a detrimental effect at this time of year especially.
And of course, most farmers, when that first cut of silage is taken, they're out with slurry or soil water almost immediately to try to get the grass to come on quickly again. So again, the slurry spreading after the cutting of silage, that's equally as important as effluent spillage into a river or a stream.
Absolutely, yes. And just for farmers to be mindful of, you know, the weather conditions. I know at the moment, obviously, it's forecast for lovely fine weather, but if there is any rain or heavy rain forecast, just to be mindful of all the rules and guidelines around spreading. And all that information is available on the Chagascan Department of Agriculture websites anyway, so people can refer to those.
Rightio. One last question then. Your takeaway message to farmers in Tipperary and the surrounding counties, what is that on this particular Saturday morning?
Yeah, so I suppose I have three key messages that I would like to get across. The first one is just quite simply, we're appealing to farmers to be careful not to allow any runoff, whether it be effluent from pits or bales, whether it's slurry spreading, any runoff to meet the river and the watercourses, because it's detrimental to fish and may cause a fish kill. Second message is, we're appealing for people to contact us on our confidential hotline, 0818 34 74 24, if they see anything happening around our watercourses or any potential fish kills. And lastly, just to say that Inland Fisheries Ireland take their enforcement role around this area very seriously, but we don't want to have to get that far. We prefer to farmers to be proactive and to not let it happen in the first place and to be as vigilant as possible.
Linda, thank you ever so much for joining us this morning. That, listeners, was Linda Connor, and Linda is the South East River Basin District Director with Inland Fisheries Ireland. That's AgriPort for this week. A big thanks to John, Rosemary, Amy and Linda for joining us this morning, and please join me at the same time next week for another AgriPort on Tip FM. Coming up next is the news at 10 o'clock, and after that, Eamon Dwyer presents Down Your Way.